So we're going to jump to the second part of this podcast, and I just wanted to say miigwech, Charles, for all the discussions we've had. We've been able to, it's been really hard, but we were able to sum down 4 hours into like 45 minutes. So sit back and enjoy being Potawatomi, Charles Scott.
I started at the pots. The festival wasn't closed. Anybody could come to the festival. And a lot of, you know, a lot of the employees that aren't Potawatomis, they would bring their families, and maybe they were Shawnee or maybe they were Sac and Fox, and they would bring their families to dance. And of course they would win any competitions because they did it more than once a year.
That's when I first started to get, when I was a kid, my mom used to drag me up here. We went to all the big powwows, you know, all over. And she would come up here, you know, this was being in the 70s and early 80s. She would drag me up here, and that's what I seen. I didn't see Potawatomis. I seen everybody else.
Yeah.
I seen every other tribe. And if there was a Potawatomi dancing, I mean, if the announcer didn't say he was Potawatomi, you wouldn't know it. Even though I'm sure, you know, guys like Paul Schmettelkofer and some, you know, the chairman, they were probably there and they danced and stuff, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's good that we've got more of our people out there dancing. The girls have always been pretty solid. I have to give a shout out to my buddy Lyle Simmons. Right. Lyle Simmons. I feel like he did a good job of making it, you know, making it something to do, you know, making it, I hate to say cool. I hate to say that, but I do. I think Lyle is a cool person. And so I think a lot of other people.
He is. He's a great person. I've interacted with him on social media a few times. He's a great guy, great sense of humor.
Yeah. Yeah. He's even better. He's better in real life. He's,
right. But I came to one of our festivals, and it was around 2006, 2007, I think, right after I'd moved back here. I don't know if you remember when the guy had the buffalo head on. Do you remember that?
The guy with the breech cloth?
I don't remember. I just remember he had a big old buffalo head on his head, and they had to talk to him and tell him, hey, that's really not appropriate for, you know, our grand entry and stuff. I think he had flip flops on and shorts or something like that. It was comical. It was, you know,
that it flooded? I think 07 was the year that it flooded. Was it before that?
It might have been 2006. I think it might have been 2006. I can't really remember. Yeah. But
I was on the trash crew that year. I didn't notice anything except trash.
It didn't rub me the wrong way. It was just like, I knew by this time it was just Potawatomis only and our families. Mm-hmm. I was like, come on, man, we got to get our shit together. You know, have we really been assimilated? I mean, are we this bad that people are going to walk around and, you know, they might have a ribbon shirt on and a pair of flip flops and, you know, they're doing their thing. And I'm like, that's not. I go to these other powwows. I've been to them. They're not like that. There's a certain respect there that, you know,
there's a certain decorum. There's a certain decorum.
Yeah.
I
look up in the stand and I just see a whole bunch of people up there. They're not participating. They want to, but they probably don't know how. And so, you know, when the chairman got rid of the intertribal powwow and just went with just the Potawatomis, man, I'm all over that. I'm like, man, that's such a great move. But then it torqued up some of the other people, and, you know, here we are today.
Yeah, I'm in the camp that there's a way to do both. You know, there's a way to do both. I can see the necessity. I can see the necessity among us that we need to be among ourselves and we need to learn these things and get them right, and don't be disrespectful. I think that there is there's something to be learned from the disrespectful people. You know, like they give us the opportunity to say, "Well, it's too far. That's too far." And But
yeah, and I'm not an ultra traditionalist or anything like that, but there has to be a way. You know, one of the things that I would like to see, let's have a different, you know, let's keep our reunion, our festival for us, mm-hmm. but we can do something else. You know, we can have another.
It used to be like
for everyone.
Like when your mom was dragging you up there, that was one of the best powwows in the state. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the other people, like I'm sure you've heard it. I know you hang around. If you go to other powwows, a lot of times they'll let us know that no, I'm not allowed to come to your powwow anymore. And so that always sticks in me. But like I said, I'm not just trying to attack the things they've got. But I think that like with. To back up a little, what you were saying was the steps you had gone through. You know, you were putting in your own time with Paul before you knew who, you know, that Paul was somebody that could help you out. You know, a lot of times you were just kind of lucky on that because you might meet somebody that was in that position that they're not humble at all. And they're just like ready to brag. You know, wouldn't teach you
Sam,
anything.
This is one of the things that just draws me back to my roots, back to my ancestors. Yeah. I'd never thought in that way before.
Okay.
Meeting Paul, meeting you, you know, talking to you. These are things that I've started to pay attention that it's not chance. That's what I would love. It's not chance anymore. It may have been chance back when I was a kid. It may have been chance back in the 50s. It's not chance anymore.
Yeah.
When you meet somebody that influences you, that has an impact on you, that's on purpose, and you need to start paying attention to that.
I agree.
And that's what I would tell these young people. You know, I can't believe that our tribe doesn't have a mentorship program. You know, I know some other tribes, you know, the older men mentor some of the younger men, or they act as grandparents to the young kids. Those are all ideas that we have that's not really going to cost anything.
Right.
You just need to step up and say, let's do this.
I'll step out of bounds on that. That's because we've got too much of a white influence among our people. Like there's this role that exists, it's like the older brother or the younger uncle role. And it keeps the generations from having this space in between them. Because a lot of times in the Eurocentric mind thought, you have generations and there's this order of command that this generation doesn't.
Right.
You know, that this generation sets an example that the other one has to follow. And, you know, I think we've all, even in a Eurocentric family mindset, we've all got the aunt or the uncle that gives us a beer or, you know, something like that when we're young. And we develop these bonds with that relative.
Right.
And then, of course, whenever this power structure comes back, you know, rears its head again with generational, that would always be the uncle or aunt that we would kind of look to with sad eyes like, you know, I'm only getting caught because I was having a good time with you. And then it's like that person, that aunt or that uncle, seems to lose status among their own generation. And that's what we need to get, you know, that rid of. Because if there was an older brother, younger uncle aspect to help influence the kids, then they would be there, you know, as a guide, you know, a guide, because among kids today, and this isn't going to be popular, but among kids today, they think they're all going to try a beer. And if you've got somebody there that's there to hold their hand through the experience and then remind them, this isn't all there is to life. You know, there's a lot. Yeah. Like this is, we're going, well, this ain't all we're going to do.
No, I'm tracking, man. That's how I raised my kids.
Yeah.
You know, I told my kids at a young age, I don't want you out there trying to drink and drive. I don't want you out there experiencing this stuff by yourself. You know, I lived out in Pennsylvania, so I didn't have any family around me. It was just me, my two kids, and my wife. And so I would tell them, look, you know, if when you get to that stage and you want to try drinking, then you tell me and I'll get the beer and we'll sit in the garage and you guys can just drink all you want. you ain't going to get into trouble. You know, and you're not going to make it a habit.
Right.
That strategy works so good for me. My kids are grown now. They have their own families. They don't party it up on the weekends and have those issues that a lot of young kids have.
Yeah. I think when you take away the sneaky factor, it becomes a lot less attractive. And I think that's the wise way to go. As somebody that I don't have kids, I don't really have a right to say everybody else should, but I do agree with you. And what I was gonna say about tying in, you know, what with the path that kind of helped you get involved, that is a good path to set for an example for these younger people to come in, because you know, like with the way Paul did you with the tobacco seeds, man, that even made you have more patience.
You have no idea. I just got named in November.
Okay.
Yeah. We started this year before. It was a journey. But Paul wanted to make sure that I was grounded. He wanted to, you know, that's the job of someone who names.
Yeah.
They make sure you're grounded. They make sure that you learn a little culture. You know, you should always. You know, I'm so proud of my Potawatomi people, because we can go back four or five generations and say, that's my grandfather.
Yeah.
There's white people can't do that. They have to get on Ancestry and search it out.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that. I mean, I was raised that way. I knew who my grandma was. I knew about Sacred Heart. I knew she went to school at Sacred Heart. I knew she ran away from Sacred Heart. I knew that her dad and her mom both came from Kansas. You know, I knew that stuff.
Right.
You know, right. I'm gonna jump in real quick. How you doing, Charles? This is Josh.
I'm doing real good, man. Real good. Hey, Josh.
Hey, I am one of those Potawatomis that's not from Shawnee. That's what I call myself. And I'm listening to this. I've been enjoying the conversation. I've just been letting y'all go at it. So, like, for me, my experience as someone that's not in the Shawnee area, it has not been that great. Like, I've taken Sam many times to different cultural classes up there. We rode together. I did bandolier bag. I made moccasins. I've tried to join the drum in this thing, but I can never get to Shawnee at 3, whenever it happens on those. Seems like it's always around 3. But I think when you're talking about mentoring, I think there's another aspect, and it's the fact that our tribe is still, like, if you're not in the Shawnee area, unless you go there and someone finds you, you're not going to be found.
I'll be navigating us for this episode because we jump around so much. If you can only imagine, you know, being in a chat room with Sam. Right, Sam? Anyways, we are now about to start talking about the Potawatomis. And, you know, the last topic I brought was being someone that does live in Shawnee. And Charles is going to discuss that and throw some stats at us and talk about the Potawatomis that are not in the Shawnee area.
The other thing that we have, you know, 2/3 of our tribe lives out of state. And, you know, Shawnee's a little bitty town. Shawnee can support the 30,000 people that live in Shawnee.
Right.
But it's just a miracle of good business sense that our tribe can support 37,000, you know, with 20,000 outside. And that's a challenge. This out-of-state thing is a challenge. It's just I've racked my brain. The cultural stuff, I don't see any way – I don't see a good solution unless we throw lots of money at it.
Right. There really isn't, unless you get people to come to Shawnee or you build maybe around the different legislators, like little area offices or something, you know, like, cause we have all these regions for all these legislators.
One of the things that I ran into, and I'm still running into it, is how much apathy we have from employees that work there or from legislators and maybe all the way up to the chairman. You know, I've heard 100 times, you know, hey, we've tried this before and we just can't get enough participation.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean
I've seen that on both sides.
That doesn't stop. That means try a different way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always reminded of this. This is a little story that I try to tell people when I talk to out of state members. If you have a fire that is a big roaring fire and it's full of coals, if I pick one of them coals up and I set it outside the fire about 15 feet away, that coal doesn't stay as hot as what's in that fire pit. Yeah. That coal will eventually burn out. And that's what I see with our out-of-state members. They want to be next to that fire, but we can't build the fire so big that it reaches them. They've got to come back closer to that fire.
Right, and they need a reason to come back too, you know. And that's why I think they're doing good, though, by increasing the job growth to allow that.
They are.
I think they are, as long as it increases among, like, CPN at the same rate, you know.
Right.
Like, if we've got 30% employees that are CPN, and then if they hire 100 people, I think 33 of those people need to be CPN. You know, just to at least keep it at the same rate that it is now. Doesn't have to be only.
Do you know what the rate is right now?
I think I way overshot it at 30.
I heard it was 20, I thought.
I think it's not even 20.
Not even 20.
I think we have about 1,500 employees all together. This was before COVID. 1,500 employees and roughly 150, maybe 200 are CPN.
No, that sounds about right. Because I had a job interview about 15 years ago, and the guy, I was the only CPN in the room. The HR person was Sack and Fox. The manager was bragging to me. He was some white guy from Vegas. And end of the day, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to hire you. And I was offering to take a $15,000 pay cut just because I wanted to work for the tribe. He's like, yeah, because we just don't want no Potawatomi in our building. I was like, oh, nice. And I just shot the finger and walked out. No, I mean, that was a long time ago. But
and see, if that would be me, I'd have pinned him against the
wall. Yeah, I didn't know what to think.
I just don't.
I was just so shocked. I was just like, all right, well. So, I mean, I'm fine. I work for another tribe. Right. So, I mean, I'm good. But I was just like, that wouldn't happen where I work at, though. Right. I'd be like, I'd been fired on the spot. I was just like.
Yep. See that? And I kind of did that. I when I first moved back in 2005, I had just finished my degree at St. Gregory's. In 2006, and the chairman was the only guy from the tribe that was there. He was out there in the middle of all these graduates shaking hands, asking people if they were CPN. I went up and met him, shook his hand, told him I was CPN, and he said, go down to the job center and apply for a job. He said, we'll put you to work. And I'm like, hell yeah. And I went down there with my little degree, flapping in the wind, you know, still ink's all wet on it. And they told me I could deal cards at the casino. You know, for, mm-hmm. I don't know, $10 an hour. I'm like, piss off. Yeah. I ain't doing that.
Right. Plus tips.
Yeah, don't forget plus tips.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus tips. Yeah. But the chairman didn't know that. He didn't know that's the job I was offered. You know, that wasn't in my degree. It didn't have nothing to do. You know, I mean, I've been in the military forever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of that stuff mattered. And it's because it didn't go up the chain. No, we didn't have a policy that said, hey, look at these guys and make a point to get those people in the positions we need. But I think we do that now a little bit better.
Yeah, I think they do.
Those people we have in our education department, young people, man.
Mm-hmm.
I think her name is Tessia.
Yeah, uh-huh. I know you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, they're bright and young and full of fire, and you know, people can say what they want about Justin Neely. That guy is passionate about the language.
Yes, he is. You can't
walk in that building and him not talk to you about language.
Mm-hmm.
And them are the directors we need. But there's only so many positions for those kind of people.
You're right. We can't all be directors. You know, like you can't, right. You know, and that's, I think that's one thing that, you know, should kind of be separate from the, you know, that there's the tribe with the capital T and there's the tribe with the lowercase T.
Right.
Right.
And, you know, people, right. They work for the tribe with the capital T, but the rest, you know, everybody else, you know, because there aren't, you can't just make a director position for everybody. And so like for people like right. Josh, that he didn't grow up in the area, mm-hmm. and he has an idea or right. something that he wants to incorporate within, you know, for the whole tribe, but he wants to incorporate right. it within the capital T tribe. And that's right. that's going to benefit, you know, the capital T right. tribe and the whole tribe that does choose, because now here's another medium that we can learn. And that's one of the things that with the technology, there's a lot of people out there that right. have something to share. And once they figure out how to use the right. technology to share it, then it becomes right. available. But if there were people like yourself right. in the Shawnee area
right.
that didn't have to worry about losing their job, if they had an idea that they brought in from a tribal right. member that didn't grow up in the community, then there would, right. you know, there would be a bigger influence, you know, because like if a lot of the people that are culturally influential to the Potawatomi people, they don't live in Shawnee either. You know, they live south of town or north of right. town, but they don't live in town, and they don't, right. it's taken a long time. I know a few of them that are working there now, and it's taken a long time to, you know, mm-hmm. break down some of the barriers that either exist at HR level or at the mental level, you know, like I was mentioning my friend earlier that felt like he wasn't welcome there. Right. And that's this mental level that may or may not right. exist on the physical level, but to be able to set the example, for some of these people, like if these kids showed up, right. you know, like if you and I were both there, Charles, you know, you would be able to, you know, I could be like, well, tonight you're going to go hang out with Charles and he's going to take you to a few classes and he's going to talk to you about some things and whatever he does, right. he's going to do it. And then in the morning tomorrow, right. I'm going to take you out and I'm going to make you build a sweat lodge and then we're going to sweat and just give them the, you know, give them right. the treatment. And if they can hold up for a week or so, and then after that week, right. then you ask them, so what would you like to add to all this? Whenever right. I worked for Justin, he would take me into the interviews and he would ask all the questions, and get his information. And then when he was done, he would always let me ask a couple of questions. And the question I always asked, because it was for the language department, I'd say, right. you know, picture yourself down the road 3 years from now. You've got a right. good grasp on the language. You know how to use it, but you can't work in language anymore.
Right.
What is right. it that you want to do for the tribe at that point? Because I right. knew that would happen down the road, because once, right. you know, right. things happen. And that was always the question that would right. just hit these people like a load of bricks, because when you're interviewing for a job of that nature, in your mind, right. you're thinking, man, I hope I get this job. I'd love to learn the language. I'd love to share the language. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. But in fact, it does not work that way. To be, you know, to spread the language, to be an ambassador right. of the language, you have to go, because like, and that was one thing that Justin and I had a lot of great ideas, right. but it was implementing them that it was almost impossible, because what we would want to do would be to offer a stipend to other employees that would come and learn the language, not just show up to class and, you know, check box that you were here, but to show up, learn the language, and then to, you know, go back to your own department and use that.
Right.
You know, like.
Right. See, Sam, I have a different remedy for that. We shouldn't pay any tribal member to learn the language, but we should force them to use the language.
This is what I found most interested was that Charles has invested so much time into, you know, research and bringing up the sign language. Sign language is hardly mentioned, and Charles does a great job at explaining this segment right here.
One of the cool things that I've learned, and I'm developing this argument now, and matter of fact, that, you know, I told you I was sitting at my desk working on this, is has to do with Indian Sign Language.
Okay.
We're trying to teach, and this ain't a knock against Justin or anybody in the language, you know, Donna or Jim or anybody that teaches the language or that knows the language. We're trying to teach Potawatomi to people that only speak English. Mm-hmm. And we're using English methods to teach our language.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's been lost is this Indian Sign Language. Other tribes, the Plains tribes, some of the Southwest tribes, they use sign language in conjunction with teaching their own language.
Yeah.
So that you learn sign and you learn, in our case, Potawatomi.
Yeah, that's,
by doing both, you take away that English element. And you can learn the language faster. You can retain words way faster just by making the sign than you can any other way. And, you know, I mentioned this to Justin, you know, and he's a little bit receptive to it because, you know, he likes to teach, and anything to do with language, he's about it. So,
right.
But one of the things he said, we may not have used sign language. So I started to research, and I found that we use sign language a lot, so much so that by the time we started to lose our language, we had already lost our sign language.
Okay.
But it's the same sign language right. that all Indians
use. Right. Right.
You know, the French used it. The English used it. That's how we mm-hmm. spoke with them. And I think that's how we ought to start teaching it.
I think that would definitely help because it engages the left and the right brain.
Miigwech Charles and Miigwech Sam, and thanks to all the hard work, to all the producers in the studio for making the show today. That's me, actually. Hey, and our next one, we're actually going to be talking about superheroes and the, you know, which one's your favorite. Feel free to go to our Facebook page or Twitter or continue to email us. We also have a Spotify poll this week, so let us know what you think, and we will see you down the road. I'm a P.